Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Yesterday's press briefing, the quadruple threat, KJP, Karine Jean-Pierre, fielding questions from Peter Ducey, basically him and the...
him and everybody else watching?
No, him and the guy from RealClearPolitics.com are the only ones who ask questions in those press briefings. He wants to understand from KJP how the administration thinks things are going. How would you say people are receiving your plans to address their breadbasket issues, if you will, when 88% of the country is on the wrong track? Here's what she said.
The president understands what the American people are going through. He understands that gas prices are high because of Putin's tax hike, because of the war that Putin, the brutal war that Putin has taken on in Ukraine, and their brave fight to fight for their democracy. That's what we're seeing here. And also the food insecurity, the food cost has skyrocketed. And that's why the president has done everything that he can to blunt those high prices.
Uh-huh. Yeah, did you notice the slight change in terminology? We've gone from the Putin price hike to the Putin tax hike now. That communist dictator is raising our taxes.
And that it's affected everything, you know, gas prices, food prices. But this is my favorite tweet of all time. I showed you this yesterday. It's Biden's tweet saying, "My message to the companies running gas stations and setting prices at the pump is simple. This is a time of war and global peril. Bring down the price you're charging at the pump to reflect the cost you're paying for the product and do it now." Okay, ready. U.S. Oil and Gas Association, their response: "Working on it, Mr. President. In the meantime, have a happy 4th, and please make sure the White House intern who posted this tweet registers for Econ 101 for the fall semester." We'll retweet it out, but I mean, that was...
That's a good response, and it's on point.
Well, because if it's not Putin's fault, now it's the gas company's fault. Now it's the gas station owner's fault.
Mm-hmm.
See what's happening?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see what's happening. I also note... That Mayor Triple Threat, we've gone from the quadruple threat to the triple threat here, all the threats. Mayor Triple Threat is headed to Paris and London to tout Chicago's economy. Chicago's economy is thriving.
Yeah.
Our business sector has set records. She's not specific about what those records are. Keeping us competitive, top global financial cities. On behalf of our world-class city, I'm thrilled to lead a delegation of city officials and business leaders to London and Paris. Ken Griffin will not be attending, where I look forward to discussing Chicago's economic strengths, speaking at FinTech Week London 2022, and learning new ideas to further develop our business community and economy.
Do you see the list of people she's taking with her? And are we paying for this? I mean, she's bringing everybody. She's bringing people I've never even heard of.
No, that's it's a goodwill and an econ development mission to tout Chicago to generate business. Oh, sure. It's the junkets. Yeah. Like the junkets that Richie Daly used to go on to China.
To set himself up
to do business in China once he decided he was done being mayor.
This is a Catherine Engel, Director of Internships and Applied Psychology and Senior Lecturer at UIC. Why does she need to go?
I don't know. But the more important point here is Triple Threat is going overseas to share what we know and learn what they do.
Uh-huh. This is called a paid summer vacation.
And
say that.
And the big guy is doing the same when he bringing his tin can to the Saudis, asking them for more oil, maybe visiting the oil that we've exported.
Oh, that's right. 5 million barrels.
Even Democrats now are distancing themselves from that policy. That's pretty interesting. But maybe since they're all overseas, all these Democrat socialists, and right. I hope she has room on the plane for Jelly Belly, or he can take his own. Since they're going overseas, maybe they should stop in the land of windmills and wooden shoes. Maybe they should stop in Sri Lanka. I mean, since they're doing a little globetrotting. The land of tulips and windmills and wooden shoes. You see what's going on in the Netherlands? You know, we spent a lot of time, appropriately so, talking about like the Freedom Convoy in Canada. Well, they have sort of a farmer convoy going on in the Netherlands because these same policies that are being promoted and pursued by the big guy, by Spalding, by Triple Threat, that's led to a farmers' revolt in the Netherlands, because a strike, really, because their property's been taken away effectively by the government.
Ooh.
The Dutch government cut nitrogen emissions because this is part of their Green New Deal, effectively. They essentially stealing farmers' land and putting them out of business. They protested. Now there has been police action between the farmers and the government. The government's actually opened fire, the reporting goes, on farmers protesting. Meanwhile, local restaurants, I saw one story, a local restaurant and the serving staff there is bringing beer out to the farmers that are protesting. Actually, Tucker Max, who got some infamy about 15 years ago when he wrote the bestseller, I Hope They Serve Beer in Hell. He has a thread on this, too. It's sort of interesting. And, you know, I hope it's not foreshadowing, but, you know, you think these things happen in third world countries, except we're seeing a lot of these things happening in first world countries on various fronts, from COVID to these authoritarian anti-science climate related policies, destroying economies and seizing people's private property. Yeah, he writes, 6 months ago, I talked about the coming chaos. I called it managed decline. And he goes through this Dutch example. Here's part of his thread. The Dutch farmers, Dutch police have fired shots at completely peaceful and unarmed farmers. This is why you don't give up your guns. One tweet on this, but this is, why did the government do that? Why did the Dutch government do this? To meet EU climate goals. The Dutch, the world's second biggest ag exporter after the United States. And what you had is what you had there is what you see here. Unelected bureaucrats made up numbers, and here we are. They know this is going to starve people around the world. This is Tucker Max's take on this. How can I say that for sure? Because they're already trying to justify and rationalize the benefits of world hunger. This is from the United Nations. You can click to this link. Stories about carbon food labels that may be coming. James Lindsay tweeting about this. They're going to score your food and limit how much of it you can buy according to the scores.
Oh, my God.
And
you don't think that that'll come here?
Well, that's what I'm saying.
They're trying to make farmers buy electric vehicles. Those pieces of equipment are millions of dollars.
But you know, I'm not a conspiracy theorist. You report on what these institutions are saying. You report on where these movements want us to go, what their advocacy is. And, you know, if the dots connect, then they connect. I mean, you're seeing this play out with this quote unquote Dutch farmer strike right now. The other piece of this, mm-hmm. with the scoring of food, and Nicole Kidman, do you know about this movement to eat bugs for the betterment of mankind?
She doesn't eat.
To lower food costs? Well, that's all she eats.
I mean,
apparently.
And salads.
This is about lower food costs, you preserve land, seize it, and then preserve it, apparently. Nicole Kidman did this video for Vanity Fair on eating bugs as an advocacy video, okay. Not as like a, take a listen.
I am here to reveal my hidden talent, eating micro livestock, cornworms. They're still alive. Mmm. Extraordinary. Mmm. Very moist, chewy. Can't quite describe the flavor, but need a little water. Let's try the second course, shall we? Just a little side note. 2 billion people in the world eat bugs, and I'm one of them. Because here we go. Some mealworms. I'm telling you, I'd win Survivor. That is a fruity taste. I'd recommend it. Here we have. Oh, crickets. Oh, nothing. Oh, awesome.
Really enjoying
like nothing
yourself.
You've ever tasted. Like a hairy nut. Don't. Ooh. Oh my gosh. A nut from the shell. And now for dessert. The fried grasshopper. These are amazing. These are exquisite. Grasshoppers. I recommend them to anyone. Thank you for spending so much time with me and watching me eat bugs. Till next time.
And they're crawling around, you guys. I mean, this is.
She's eating from bowls of mealworms
with,
and fried crickets.
With her chopsticks.
And grasshoppers
she's
or whatever.
She's dressed to the nines, ready to go.
Yeah, in addition to being out of her mind, just sort of categorically, that's the specific thing. And this is all like sort
all
of
the shaming if you eat
environment. Well, this is all like these environmental authoritarians that these are their policies and these are the real world implications. You think it's sort of, you know, fun when these people are, I don't know, trying to save the seals or something. Well, now they're in charge of your energy policy. In Sri Lanka, supermarket powers are out. Government began imposing daily power cuts as it runs out of hydroelectricity on top of a severe shortage of fuel. Because even though it's a third world country, they went the direction of this, you know, renewable energy religion that is being advanced by pedestrian political hacks in charge in this city, this state, this country. Triple threat, Jelly Belly, the big guy. I mean, it's really interesting to look at what's happening in other countries, you know, like if Illinois ever looked at what is happening in other states and maybe you could see the difference in terms of bad policy and good policy and the respective impacts. It's really interesting. You dismiss a third world country like Sri Lanka. Okay, but the policies are the policies and people are people and incentives are incentives. And now you have people in Sri Lanka who are starving, literally trying to eat the rich. I mean, you have unprecedented violence. So you have the combination of martial law in some places and anarchy in others. And what is it over? Energy and food. Energy and food. We're not different. We are different in terms of our system. We're different in terms of the impediments to descend into the madness that you see in Sri Lanka. The hurdles that prevent us descending into the madness of a Sri Lanka or even the seizure of land in the Netherlands, but particularly with the Netherlands, not that much different, particularly with respect to the attitudes of the political ruling class. So I don't know. I mean, it just seems to me I found it interesting because, you know, it's useful to pick your head up and take a look around rather than just staring at your navel like we're so wont to do in Chicago and Illinois.
The more you listen, the more you listen, the more you'll know. This is Chicago's Morning Answer. Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Hey, business owners, is your business and money in good hands? Does your bank invest in your success? Hi, Mike Gallagher here, letting you know that when you need a relationship bank, Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. I love these guys. Not only do they have expansive industry experience, a strong financial track record, but they're also highly capitalized for strategic growth. That's so important. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. They know what it means to grow a business by designing solutions that are right for you and only you. These are real people. They're ready to help. So reach out to my friends at Signature Bank. Make the call today. 773-467-5630. 773-467-5630. Or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Your business could be Signature Bank's next success story. Go online, signaturebank.bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender. Signature Bank.
America First with Sebastian Gorka. Today at 3, right before Sean Thompson at 4 on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. From the Everything is Racist file, expressing shock over the 4th of July parade shooting in Highland Park. That's racist.
Says who?
Oh, a real think piece from NPR. Jessica Beard is a fellow at the Philadelphia Center for Gun Violence Reporting. My guess is that when people say that, they mean we didn't say that's the last place you'd expect it to happen. My guess is when people say that, they mean we didn't expect this to happen to rich white people in a suburb of Chicago.
Oh,
A lot of this boils down to which places people are comfortable in, said Rashawn Ray, a fellow at the Brookings Institute. There are different crime rates in these areas, but it's also classed and racialized in terms of who is perceived to be potential criminals and who are perceived to be potential victims. 312-642-5600, Turnkey.pro answer line, 64636DA, Turnkey.pro text line. So I guess we're supposed to expect mass shootings. We're supposed to express no shock. Huh.
Basically, they're telling us not to care.
Rashawn Ray, I think the empathy part here is key. A lot of us can empathize what happened in Highland Park.
Oh, thanks.
Whereas you go to the south or west side of Chicago, people have less empathy because it's blaming the people in that community. Rarely are those same sorts of accusations put on predominantly white areas. It's interesting because that's not happening at all here. I mean, except by, you know, people like journalists at NPR and these eggheads at these silly think tanks, advocacy organizations. Because it seems to me the interesting parallel between what we talk about when we have to go through the dreary business of the weekly body count in the city of Chicago and what we're talking about with respect to Highland Park, there's a parallel. Not a complete parallel, but an important one.
The shooter was from Highland Park, too.
The parallel is what? Family. How much time are we spending talking about the parents of the Highland Park shooter? How much time do we talk about the disintegration of the family in these neighborhoods in Chicago that are beset by violent crime? Quite a bit. It's a parallel. The quality of family life matters.
And with the Cremos, if you look at the court records, since 2009 and 2021, they were called to the Cremos house 21 times for things like one was a well-being check, domestic disputes, that suicide threat that he made against himself in 2019, and threats, you know, the other threat that he made in 2019 to kill everyone in the house. Plus, the mom has a charge for domestic violence while driving. So that was a broken home. I don't care what anyone says, that for that to happen. And when the shooting, you know, when the ATF ran the serial number on the gun, the Highland Park police chief and his whole staff knew exactly who it was and where they lived.
But as soon as the ATF got involved and really expedited that trace and figured out that person, you know, the name was read and a number of our officers knew the name. He's a local person. We knew we were on to a strong, strong suspect. And we put out the license plate information and, you know, suspect description. It was actually a community member that spotted him first on 41. And that person took it upon themselves to call police and got involved, knowing the seriousness of what this person did.
Yeah. So the relationship between mom and dad, who are no longer together, of course, give you some specifics. You mentioned one of the incidents. Let's just one altercation, August of 2010. Dad told police his relationship with mom was failing, that the wife had struck him in the head with her shoe and was intoxicated. In October of 2010, so that's the next month, mm-hmm. police called to the home because of a fight between the two. Dad said mom had been trash-talking him, knocked all his belongings off his dresser, and hit him with a screwdriver. Mom said he had been making mean statements to me, like always calling me names. Two occasions, dad and mom called the police on one another for attempts to drive while intoxicated. In June 2011, 6 months later from the previous incident, dad called police contending mom was attempting to drive to pick up her daughter while intoxicated, and that after being confronted about this, she blocked dad from leaving. And then, as you mentioned, a couple of years later, November 2013, mom called police contending that dad had been trying to drive to work while intoxicated. She ultimately pled guilty to DUI in 2012.
And the list goes on and on.
In 2002, mom pleaded guilty to a child endangerment charge after leaving dad, then about 2 years old. Leaving the son, then about 2 years old, alone in a car with the windows rolled up for 27 minutes in the parking lot of a toy store. It was 80 degrees out during the incident.
That doesn't sit well with me, especially when their attorney, Steve Greenberg, you know, who picks and chooses what media he wants because he loves, he's like a media whore, says, you know, there was nothing here. Everything was fine, he said. And the dad is doubling down and going on certain stations, you know, saying that he doesn't regret sponsoring his son's FOID card. How about shutting up? Really? I mean, he's a disgrace. People are hurting right now. You still have an 8-year-old boy who's a severed spinal cord who may never be able to walk again. He's on a ventilator. He's in critical condition. And his mom's a Zion Elementary School superintendent. She was hurt. I mean, it just, I don't even want to play the video of him yesterday, but he was.
It's the same stuff.
It's the same stuff. You know, he's like, the threat was just, it was a childhood.
It's process.
He threatened to kill
us
all. Yeah. He didn't really mean it. It was just a childhood thing. No, he's an adult. He was 19. I'm sorry. He wasn't a child.
We're not getting anywhere with him because the interviews are terrible.
He's trying to hoodwink everybody.
It's a CYA. It's a distancing yourself. It's a, I don't know what it is. But this was a family with some problems. Mm-hmm. And again, ultimately, the shooter is an adult. He is the person primarily responsible for what he did. But in terms of, you know, contributing factors, as we talk about the disintegration of the family, generally speaking, as connected to our cultural rot, including violence. And we talk about it when we talk about mass shootings on the South or West Side, or the general lawlessness. Pick a neighborhood in the city, because now you can't be shocked anywhere. You can't be shocked about violence anywhere in the city. So I guess we're getting to that point, including in the rich white areas,
like
NPR.
Yeah.
I'm not shocked about violence occurring where I live in one of those rich white areas. It has nothing to do with race. It has everything to do with family and associated behavior based on environment.
And unchecked mental illness.
That's one of the questions we still don't have an answer to from anybody. Was there an effort to get the shooter professional help? Do we know that?
No.
How do we not know that? Dad's talking, and lawyers are talking for the family, and we still don't know the answer to that question. Was he on psychiatric drugs currently or ever? We don't know that.
No. We're efforting it. I'm going to keep trying every day until they block my number.
Matt in Mount Greenwood, you're in Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Two things. I think the shooter and his parents both have mental challenges, truly. And secondly, you know, for this NPR, taxpayer-funded NPR reported to state that, is this another indication of how the left is trying to divide and conquer this country? They're doing a pretty good job of it. the fact of the matter is destruction of humanity. And it's, you have to be soulless to look at this on a racial bias, because if you look at it, I mean, dozens of people are being shot every week in Chicago, you know, 10, 20 people, you know, 5 to 10 people a week killed in Chicago. It's, well, exactly, but no one pays attention. You know, if Black Lives really mattered to Black Lives Matter founders, they'd be in Chicago every day or every other city where there's mass slaughter taking place. It's just disgusting to me. It's the breakdown of the family, to your point. The welfare state has created this mess, and it's an evolution. Every time, we deal with these kids in Chicago all the time, and some of these kids just wait to get to 18 so they get the check. That's what their aspiration is, and that's sad. As a human being, that's sad. They have no aspiration to do anything better than become an 18-year-old so they can collect a check. And it's sad to watch this. You know, and people better wake up to this, because it's the reality that we're living in.
Thanks for the call, Matt. Something else, too. The expectation of safety in Highland Park. We're shocked because Highland Park is not a white community. We're shocked because it's a safe community, because the residents there demand that it be a safe community.
It's a beautiful downtown.
They have an expectation of safety. They have an expectation that law enforcement will be present to enforce the law, to respond to crises. They expect that people who commit crimes will be prosecuted for the crimes they commit. Is that expectation the same as in Chicago?
No.
And I don't care if you're Black, white, Latino, Asian, you're in one of these communities that you have to have some resources to be in. You're there for a reason, because you have these expectations and you're going to make demands. Well, maybe if the residents of Chicago generally and in the crime-ridden neighborhood specifically would raise their expectations for the people in office, make demands on the people in office, because they have the same right as somebody in Highland Park or any other suburban enclave. That seems to me where part of the disconnect is. You want to just play racial politics like we do in the city of Chicago? Okay. I'm going to vote for the Black person because I'm Black. I'm going to vote for the Latino person because I'm Latino. I'm going to vote for the Irish guy because I'm Irish. Okay. Well, how's that going? And this is not even political, because Highland Park is a way left town. As most of these rich enclaves are. So it's not political. That's the thing that the left, the radical left, the ideological left, doesn't seem to appreciate. It's interesting. Matt brought up Black Lives Matter. Yeah. That is a very small percentage of people that are cheering these Marxist organizations on, these defund police movements on. Why? Because people, Black, white, other, rich, middle-income, other, want to be protected and want criminals, predators, removed from society. And even in rich left enclaves, they get that and they demand it. And in the city of Chicago, we don't, as illustrated by who we put in charge.
Listen to podcast of Dan and Amy from the AM 560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com.
Hey, business owners, is your business and money in good hands? Does your bank invest in your success? Hi, Mike Gallagher here, letting you know that when you need a relationship bank, Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. I love these guys. Not only do they have expansive industry experience, a strong financial track record, but they're also highly capitalized for strategic growth. That's so important. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. They know what it means to grow a business by designing solutions that are right for you and only you. These are real people. They're ready to help. So reach out to my friends at Signature Bank. Make the call today. 773-467-5630. 773-467-5630. Or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Your business could be Signature Bank's next success story. Go online, signaturebank.bank. Member FDIC. Equal housing lender. Signature Bank.
/mobile. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. The de facto defund the police bill. It doesn't directly deal with law enforcement funding, but it certainly deals with how police are able to operate in Illinois. This legislation passed last year.
Yeah, he signed the bill at Chicago State, and everybody was so excited. All the every lawmaker got a pen, Dan, and you have a pen, and you have a pen.
So when we talk about violence in Chicago and other communities around the state, we have to talk about Governor Spaulding and this legislation and its impact. Now, of course, they were able to amass a coalition of support, including from certain elements of law enforcement, the politicized elements, like the Illinois Association of Chiefs of Police.
Yeah, unions.
Well, they're not a union.
Well, okay.
That's an association, but they're the politicians. That's what police chiefs generally are. They're politicians. Please see David Brown in Chicago for a prime example. Well, one of the interesting provisions that we've talked about a lot in cities like New York, when they moved their similar de facto defund the police legislation, no cash bail. So, effective January 1st of 2023, cash bail is abolished in Illinois.
Which means,
what does it mean? Do you have an appreciation for what it means? It means you're going to see something akin to the political culture and also and by extension public safety in Chicago in a lot more communities around this state. That's not me saying it. That's Jim Glasgow saying it. He's a Democrat. He's also the Will County State's Attorney. On July 4th, he gave a bit of a talk in Naperville about the impact of this forthcoming provision taking effect in this law signed by Governor Pritzker, supported by Illinois Democrats up and down the state.
That's an incredible difference. Now, we've got a bill coming down the pike here that's going to go into effect on January 1st. It's called the Safety Act, and then the no bail bill portion of it. If that bill goes into effect, literally, Bob and I, our hands will be tied.
Bob
the police officer's hands will be tied. The judges, and we'll have this. What you see in Chicago, we'll have here. I won't be able to hold anybody in jail longer than 90 days if they demand trial. And at the 90th day, they get out, no matter what crime they committed. And then, if they don't show up for court, I can't get a warrant. I have to get a rule to show cause. Well, ask your fellow officers here if they're going to go in the inner city and try to serve a civil writ on someone charged with a triple homicide. It's not going to happen. They're not going to come back to court. It's going to be literally the end of days. And I'm working on a project to deal with it. I can't say much more than that. But you, as the electorate, need to demand anybody running for election in November is going to vote to repeal this bill. It will destroy the state of Illinois. I don't even understand the people who support it, why they can't realize that. I've got 640 people in the Will County Jail. All their bonds will be extinguished on January 1st. And 60 are charged with murder. And many others with violent class X felonies.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 646-36, type in DA, then a quick comment.
You ready for the new reality in Illinois that Jim Glasgow is describing on January 1st? 640 inmates in Will County, 60 charged with murder. They walk. You ready for that, Will County? Because, boy, you sent some of those Democrats to the state legislature, to the General Assembly. Will County. and all of the collar counties. And as I mentioned, Jim Glasgow, he's referring to Bob. He said he was referring to Bob Berlin, who's the DuPage County State's Attorney. So I don't know. I don't know if I see a lot of state's attorneys, at least those that are interested in prosecuting criminals. Yeah, I don't see them rallying to this. And it's interesting, Glass, make this the issue that informs your vote on November 8th, repeal of this idiotic legislation.
Well, every, office and seat in the Illinois General Assembly is up for a vote. So if your state rep or state senator is going to vote
a third of the state.
But I'm saying
every state rep, a third of the state senate.
Okay.
Well, no, I'm sorry. No, right. Right. Every state rep and a third of the state senate, in addition to the constitutional offices.
Yeah.
Right.
So find out where they stand on this bill, and if they're for it, then vote against them. Run against them. Do whatever you can, because it doesn't only do that; it expands the detainees' rights, requires body cameras at all departments by 2025. And police new reforming of police training. And it makes it easier for the suspect or the perp to sue the police officer.
Yeah, I mean, Glasgow,
there's no protections at all for police.
We've talked about this in Chicago nonstop over the last several years. This is now going to be the protocol statewide. This is Glasgow's point. The law requires a higher burden of proof to detain accused violent criminals. Defendants shall be presumed eligible for pretrial release, unless prosecutors present, quote, clear and convincing evidence to deny the suspect pretrial release, such as proof the suspect committed the crime and poses a threat to the physical safety of a specific identifiable person. Prosecutors are required to submit a request for detention if the offender committed a crime that poses a significant threat to public safety for an individual or to an individual or community. The state also is required to provide each suspect a hearing within 48 hours to determine if the suspect should be released. And Glasgow makes the point, it's impossible to provide evidence needed within 48 hours since it takes time to review body and surveillance cameras and crime labs, take times to process evidence and so on and so forth. He goes on to say, I'm not against no bail for nonviolent crimes, but when it's protecting the health, safety, and welfare of law-abiding citizens, we have to be able to do that. And it sounds like, reasonable, and we're balancing, but how it works in practice with people who are ideologically disposed to support legislation like this, you see it every day with the political ruling class in Chicago and Cook County, with Preckwinkle, with Lightfoot, with Fox, with Dart, with Evans.
Well, and the Illinois Legislative Black Caucus says, this is needed to step forward in making the justice system equitable and fair for Black Latino communities.
Right. And this legislation came out of the Black Lives Matter, George Floyd zeitgeist.
Yep.
It's ill considered, and it will have a significant deleterious impact on public safety statewide. This is the point that Glasgow's making in no uncertain terms, and he uses his own county, Will, to drive home the point, I think, pretty effectively.
And he's not an alarmist by any means. I mean, he's a reasonable man. And I rarely see him come out against any bills that have been passed and push back. But he's worried about public safety.
And again, he's a Democrat.
Yes.
Mike in the loop.
You guys are so spot on. I was talking to a friend of mine who's a judge about this a few months ago. And he said exactly what you're saying, Dan, that the state's attorney has got to file paperwork to keep these people in. Otherwise, they're just gone. The other thing is, you know who introduced this bill, I think, was that Cam Buckner, who's running for mayor on a law and order platform. I mean, the whole thing is just upside down. Just get your helmets on for January 1st, because it's going to be raining criminals in Illinois, that's for sure.
Thanks for the call, Mike.
And they call it the Safety Act. And it does anything but like Safety, Accountability, Fairness, and Equity Today Act.
Of course, they always come up with these Orwellian acronyms for their signature legislation. But that's why you have to go to actual impact. How many stories do we have to do? Does CWB Chicago have to do in their long-running series now of we're now up to number 65 of a person who committed, who's accused of committing a violent crime, committing a violent crime while they're out on electronic monitoring. They got no cash bailed.
I met a couple last week. I told you, I went to the beach, Foster Beach, and was walking the dogs, and they had a puppy, pit bull, and I went up to them, and I looked down to pet the dog, and I noticed they both had electronic monitoring bracelets on. Uh-huh. And I'm not shy, so I'm like, what'd you do? And she said, oh, carjacking. And then her boyfriend was armed robbery. And I'm like, oh, well, how does this work? Why are you out? She said, well, we stay in for 5 days, and then we get 48 hours off, but we have to stay
in
Chicago.
That's right. Yeah, right.
I asked her about it. She was honest.
Well, you got to give carjackers and armed robbers a chance to enjoy the beach, too.
Well, they got to get their drink on, too, Dan, because they had a cooler full of fun going. And I thought you were going to say
lawyer screwed me. What happened? We could do a little Shawshank there. But no,
we'll play certain teams and they'll have players that have.
So they were on electronic monitoring for carjacking and armed robbery.
One was carjacking, one was armed robbery. There were a couple. And a cute little pit bull. And they're very friendly. And I'm not afraid to talk to anybody. So I'm like, hey, so what are you doing?
So the Bonnie and Clyde couple that you ran into, pretty interesting that they're so forthcoming about being a carjacker and armed robber.
Well, because she said she's reforming herself and she's going to be on the right path now. And
another honor student turning her life around.
I don't know. But it's right there. It's like, okay.
Why did they rob?
I didn't get that far into it.
But she's not interested in being a carjacker anymore?
No, she's reforming. She's done.
Uh-huh. And is he still interested in being
an
armed robber?
He didn't really talk to me too much.
Uh-huh.
She had the neck and a few tats on her face. And
well, these are the kind of
conversations. They seem to really love their dog. They were, they're not.
Well, the rest of Illinois can have these conversations around town that you have in Chicago, that we could have in Chicago with people that are charged with Class X felonies wandering around.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Having fun. It was a beautiful sunny day at the beach. I mean, my God, if that's what jail is, I'll go to jail. That sounds great.
Mm. I don't think you want to go to 26 and Cal, but
I've been there many times. Yeah,
on the other side of the bars. Yeah, I don't.
No,
think
I did get processed there once though with Tom Dart. They took a bunch of reporters. They randomly selected. It was like a lotto system, and then you got booked and you went through the processes. If you're arrested, you went in for fingerprinting where you get your mug shot, a whole.
What are you talking about? That is not being put in prison.
No, I know, but I'm saying, but they wanted to see what it was like to go to prison, and then
that's not what
you
it's
went
like
to the cell block. You went to Division 9. You went to the other.
Yeah, that's not what it's like if you're actually an inmate. Okay.
I'm just saying.
I know. Right, reporters playing pretend. Isn't that cute? I'm glad everybody in the Chicago press corps could take a field trip to the jail. The hell. How unserious we are. Jim and Lyle, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
I have a mugshot.
Good morning, Amy.
Yeah,
morning,
I bet. Man. With a big smile on your face. And then you got pictures with all the cops. And yeah. I know what it's like to be a prison
guards,
guard.
Prison
I hung out
guards.
With one. Yeah. Okay. Jim
good morning,
and Lyle, sorry.
Good morning, Amy.
Go ahead.
A jewel that I've been going to for 30 years in Naperville Central Core. Not off a ramp and an expressway, but in Central Naperville. Tuesday evening, 9:02 p.m. It was barely dark out. Guy gets carjacked in the parking lot. This is already happening in DuPage County.
Oh yeah,
my home was burglarized two years ago. It's to see Jim Glasgow come out this passionately, who I've known for almost 30 years.
Mm.
It's a big frickin' deal.
Yeah.
Wake up, people! It's here.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Stava Murray, defend your vote.
Yeah, right. Right.
Janet Yang Rohr, defend your non-vote in case they needed you.
Yeah, say their names. Say them.
Call them out, people. We got to get rid of these people.
Thanks for the call, Jim.
And this Rep Justin Slaughter in Chicago, he's a Democrat, obviously, said the Republicans who are against it, quote, a bad stench of racism.
Of course. Of course, everything's
end
racist.
Quote, yes.
Okay, I mean, you know, and the Chardonnay Antifa in the suburbs, I mean, if you want to buy that, okay, well, you can choose. You can choose on November 8th. You can choose to buy that race hustle from the Justin Slaughters and the Cam Buckners and the J.B. Pritzkers of the world. You can choose to buy that. But just remember what you're choosing when you experience what's coming. Because if you know, you start to see things like Jim is describing in the Western Burbs, then understand that you chose to have that happen in your community. I mean, Glasgow, as Jim was saying, right, it is a big deal because he's really a prosecutor. He's not so much a political guy, but you have to be in part a political guy to be a prosecutor. You're elected. So, I appreciate that at least he's sounding the alarm because not a lot of other people are. And they should be. David in McCook.
Hey, happy Friday, guys.
Yeah.
Amy, I've always wanted to take you out on a date, but if you're engaging with criminals on house arrest, I don't think I want to anymore.
Yeah, she runs with a rough crowd, David. Yeah.
Ran into him at the
and what did you do?
My little coach and teacher voice. And what about you, sir? Why do you have that on your ankle?
Mm-hmm.
They had a really cute gray pit bull puppy dog, though.
Wonderful.
And they were nice to it.
They sound like a nice couple.
They wanted to socialize with other dogs.
Other than the carjacking and the armed robbery, they sound like lovely people.
You know what? Maybe I'll get invited to their wedding.
They're not married?
No.
Just seeing how it works out. Maybe after. Well, I mean, I would say, you know, maybe after they get out, but this is Chicago. They are out. John Crown Point.
Hi, Dan and Amy. Love your guys' show.
Oh, here we go.
But I love Amy more. Hey, wanted to talk about, well, but Amy was talking about
call.
She's got...
I'm sorry. Go ahead, John.
Amy was talking about when, you know, she got booked or whatever. But do you remember when Walter Jacobson acted like as a homeless person on the street?
I remember it well.
Well, see, that's
your dad
Walter, right? That's your dad.
Yeah, everyone thinks it's.
I know. Yeah. Yeah, right.
I remember that.
No, I know. Walter Jacobson knew what it was like to be homeless. He impersonated a homeless person for a news bit.
You know, I'm going to bring a purse that this prisoner made for me because during that tour, I was talking to this one guy, Eddie, and he made me a purse out of candy wrappers. I'm going to bring it.
I thought you were going to say human skin. I'm glad you said candy wrappers.
Flavity.
Tim Woodstock.
Hi, good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy. Governor Pritzker recently went to Highland Park and proclaimed how furious he was and told the crowd to be angry and obviously pointing blame on people who promote some kind of, in his mind, a gun culture and IRA members. And there's kind of a pathological disconnect, I think, between people who can support the idea of confiscating people's guns or making them so hard to get that it's ridiculous to protect yourself. And on the other hand, in just a few short months, we're going to be releasing dangerous people onto the streets. And it kind of reminds me of something that I heard from Dennis Prager that is an old Jewish saying that when you're cruel to the kind, you'll end up being kind to the cruel. And that's what the left is. They're kind to the cruel. They're cruel to the kind.
Yeah, that's right. Thanks for the call, Tim. And you have to focus on getting furious about a specific class of firearms to direct people's focus there rather on, for example, this topic that we just tackled.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Morning Answer.
On AM 560, The Answer. America First with Sebastian Gorka. Today at 3, right before Sean Thompson at 4 on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, and stop the presses for a second. I made a mistake.
Wait, mark this down. 641, and the date is July 8th.
Right.
What?
Yeah, this goes,
please.
Put it on my permanent record. I we're talking about who's up for election. This is important because we're talking about who's up for election November 8th at the state level in terms of legislators.
And I said all state reps and state senators.
Right. You're correct, but not for the reason you think.
Oh, I'm making an apology, but kind of.
Because you think they're up every 2 years all the time.
No. Oh, this year they are.
Oh, really? What are senators? What are senators' terms?
I thought they were... State senators?
Yeah, what are their terms?
I thought, state reps are every 2 years.
Right.
Same with the aldermen. Mm-hmm. State senators, like every three? Four?
No. They're stacked 4-4-2.
4-4-2, you say. Right. So what is this 4-4-2 you speak
of? 4 years, four years, then 2 years, then 4 years, 4 years, 2 years. That repeats.
And there's no term.
So it's part.
I know that.
So that's partial up normally, but because it's a redistricting year.
Everyone's up.
So I want to correct the record there because I want to make sure that.
No, I get it. Everybody knows. Call your state rep and state senator and say, where do you stand on this bill?
And if they're against, against repealing, or if they voted for that bill, or if they didn't vote against it, you know, they took a pass to hide, then you should throw them out.
Find a new candidate.
Okay. Now that the record is corrected, yes. Oh, I feel so much better. It was a weight that was on my shoulders for the last 11 minutes.
Okay. Well, so I'm glad you're okay.
Yeah, thank you. Some COVID updates. one is better get ready to lock her down again.
Aja, what's his name? That new White House executive on COVID was saying yesterday that, you know, cases are on the rise. Even those who are vaccinated.
For those of you scoring at home, we're talking BA5, threatening new wave infections. Even among those recovered from the virus, the risk of COVID is increasing in much of the country, according to the Center for Control.
Is anybody even paying attention anymore? Anybody care?
I thought this was a pandemic of the unvaccinated. That's happening. But I think it would be interesting to ask Triple Threat, Spalding, at your next meetings with them.
Yeah,
you meet with them regularly. What do you think? I mean, what are the thresholds again? You looking at what do you call them? Mitigations? You know, remote learning. Shutting down businesses, any other mandates?
Oh, no, shutting down sports.
Bring the masks back, yeah. Shutting down sports. Yeah.
All sports, professional, collegiate, high school level.
Well, should we have football this year? Are you going to close the golf courses again?
Remember that. I will never forget that. Like, so I have two sons. We all live together, and I have to choose one to go golfing with. And he said, yes, that's what you have to do. And
right.
I just started laughing.
Two people.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I live with them.
Two people. Yeah, separate
two
carts.
People, separate yeah. carts. Yeah. Oh, so yeah. One had to walk, and then you couldn't touch the pin. Remember that?
Oh, no.
Oh, no. And then they took it out and put the little foam thing in. Remember those days?
Like they were yesterday. Those glorious days of the early days of our collective effort. Because, you know, we were all in it together. Collective effort to defeat the virus. How did that go? So we're still assessing the impact, obviously, of a shutdown for 2 years, effectively. Mm-hmm. Including the schools. So the National Center for Education Stats offered some recent survey data you may find interesting and you may find reflective of what's happening in your kid's school. 87% of public schools reported that the pandemic, and by that they mean our response, got to translate there, negatively impacted students' socio-emotional development during the 2021-22 school year. 87%. Increased incidents of classroom disruptions from student misconduct in more than half of the schools. Rowdiness outside the classroom, half of the schools. Acts of disrespect toward teachers and staff, 48%. So almost half the schools. And remember, we're talking about not incidents, increase. You know, a discernible incremental increase. Prohibited use of electronic devices, 4 in 10. The commissioner of this National Center for Ed Stats, when we see 72% of our public schools report an increase in chronic absenteeism, there's another data point, it poses an opportunity for education leaders to act quickly using tested approaches that work. It's our responsibility to disseminate the data describing the severity of the situation. Oh, no, the opportunities abound. Yeah. 72% increase to absenteeism. And this is across, you know, you're over 70%, whether it's in an urban area, rural schools, it's across the board. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. I know we're, you know, in the dog days of summer where the kids are roaming around, but particularly when you talk about sort of social emotional development in the context of violence, as we have spent so much time talking about, and obviously
my kids had nothing else to do.
Particularly this, well, hopefully they, yeah, they should have other things to do. I mean, you're talking about during the shutdowns, but
yeah, but that stays with them.
Well, that's what I'm saying. The social emotional development. Where are and the over? I mean, all these things that we talk about, and we go back, and you have this these sort of stats across the board. So when we're talking about overdoses, when we're talking about the incidence of suicide, when we're talking about the commission of acts of violence, but people who became, I don't know, isolated stoners during the shutdown, as one person described what happened to the Highland Park 4th of July shooter.
And the Buffalo, New York shooter.
Yeah, and the
his family, the one time, they did say that he was radicalized online because he had all this time at home. He was isolated, couldn't see his friends. There was no sports. There were no activities. There was no school. There was no life.
Well, again, here, this is correlation, not causation.
Criminal.
But you're seeing measurable impacts. And so that not only what can you anticipate in the fall if your kids are going back to school, but how do you reflect upon the decisions that were made? Because, you know, in Illinois, Jelly Belly still gets high marks for his handling of COVID.
I know, which surprises me. I mean, he took life experiences away from children that they cannot get back. High school graduations, proms, football, sports. I mean, you cannot, you can have all the money in the world. I don't care how rich you are, but you'll never get those back. But he was rich enough to get his family out so his daughter could play her sports. And the only recourse we had was driving every weekend.
Well,
every weekend to Wisconsin or Indiana to have those freedoms.
Well, that, you know,
I mean,
but,
it was,
to be fair, that's your fault for having kids that weren't in equestrian sports.
Oh.
Because if you would have been in an equestrian sport, then like Pritzker's daughter, you could have.
But you couldn't do it here. You had to go to Florida. But
well,
then later on.
Well, that's your fault for not having a place in Wellington.
Yeah.
You know, horse country down in Florida.
Right, yeah.
I mean, so
with all the rich people row there.
If everybody would just put their kids into equestrian sports and have summer or winter homes, I should say, in horse country like Wellington, well, then it wouldn't be a problem.
And it was rich people, you know? Like private schools opened up.
Yeah.
They were, you know, they were open. We had 12 days of in-person learning. 12.
How about on the competency thing too? I mean, is there a question that's asked all the time, mostly rhetorically. Are there any standards that some people apply to this state government and to this governor? Any standards you Pritzker voters apply?
And people that weren't going to vote for Pritzker because of COVID are now voting for him because of abortion rights. That's what I heard from three Democratic friends who are just, you know, like, well, no, we've got it because Darren Bailey, he's a preacher. He's going to take away my women's reproductive rights.
I don't care about those people. Is anybody who's supporting Pritzker, do you have any standards for performance? Do you measure anything? Or are you interested in anything being measured? Are you interested at all in outcomes, I guess is the question I'm asking.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment. And I would love to hear from a Pritzker supporer.
The schools.
Walk me through it. Walk us through it while you're voting for him.
Where we are with the schools. And well, and by that I mean kids and their intellectual as well as social emotional development. Where are we there?
Well,
the economy, the state economy. The competence of the money that was spent, including all the funny money drop shipped from the federal government. Did you see this story? North Shore Clinical Labs contracted to help with free testing programs after collecting more than $165 million from the federal government. Turns out their test didn't work.
Oh. No, a lot of them didn't.
State public health officials, that would be our state public health officials. That would be part of the Pritzker administration. State public health officials now believe these tests missed 96% of the positive cases. Now, that's $165 million, not only to miss 96% of the positive cases, but then the opportunity cost of that and the other misallocation of resources, and also the bogus numbers that were being talked about that served as the predicate for all of these draconian measures that were imposed on the state. 165 million bucks, 96% of the positive cases missed. What do you say, COVIDians? Any standards when it comes to performance? Any interest in outcomes? None? Yeah. No.
And this bull jive is going to continue next fall. There's still kids in quarantine that are in summer school. 32 this morning, in case anybody cares. 43 teachers. But this is going to continue next year. With the test to stay, hopefully they'll implement that because they only have it in 40 of the 514 CPS schools. So kids are going to miss out again. The barbaric behavior and the isolation is going to continue next fall, and nobody's fighting back. You know, they have these problems. We want kids to learn, like Pedro and Mayor Lightfoot. We want kids to, you know, be in school. But then I said, well, then why do you continue this nonsense? If my kid's sick, I'll take them to the doctor.
They don't want to understand what happened.
No.
I mean, it's not just that they don't. They don't want to. You can't just move on. Something as substantial as what we did to ourselves and the impacts that are being felt and will continue to be felt for some time, and you just want, oh, I'm glad we're done with that. We can wash our hands and pretend it never happened.
And just ignore it. And then, oh, what? Look, school starts next week.
I don't want to think about, I don't want to contemplate why it might be that 180,000 more people have died from COVID under President Biden than did under President Trump. And this isn't to say that one or the other had any magic elixirs. It's to say that there were very different approaches that were promoted. And when it comes to preventing death, which was substantial, you know, long-term illness, what are the results? Does any COVIDian want to address that? I mean, I know you won't address the studies. I know you just want to silence anybody who would ask questions, much less come to different conclusions about any of the lockdown or policies. This is where people who are interested in understanding what happened and are interested in continuing to assess the outcomes need to be persistent as the COVIDians, as persistent as these goofs that you see walking around outside as we stand here today with masks on.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one, Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, and we've got a suburban state legislator, Deb Conroy, from Eastern DuPage County, Villa Park. Good choices, Eastern DuPage County. It's going well, isn't it? Deb Conroy is proposing to increase the age in order to obtain a FOID card in Illinois. And also to do what, Amy?
Well, she sat down with NBC5 last night or during the afternoon because she's got a plan. She's calling it the white flag law. And what that is if somebody threatens themselves or somebody else, that information, whether or not they're charged, in particular, if there is no charges filed, they want that information passed to Illinois State Police.
So what do you think about raising the age to obtain a FOID card and thus to be able to purchase a gun in Illinois to 24? That's what she's proposing, right?
Yeah, 24. She wants, 24 years old to get a FOID card.
Interesting choice.
You can have your parents sign off for you at 18, but at age 24, you can get it without parental consent.
Is she going to change the sponsorship Is that part of the proposal in the wake of Highland Park? Is she going to change the ability of parents to sponsor an 18-year-old?
No, that wasn't part of it. That was part that, you know.
So raise the FOID card age to 24. So raise the age to purchase a gun in Illinois to 24. And include any threat you made to your threatening yourself, like suicidal thought, or any threat you made to do violence to somebody else, include that in your permanent record for consideration by state police with respect to any FOID card application. That's the that's the proposal. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line.
She said the red flag laws didn't work, so now we're going to change it and call it the white flag law.
We're giving up.
Yeah. We're giving
white flag.
It's a surrender. It's surrender. But she said we have to do something.
That should be our state flag, actually.
What? Oh, the white flag?
The surrender flag.
Yeah. But she, when she sat down with Channel 5, she said, you know, we have, you know, she thinks that this is going to work. She actually, this is going to change.
This is going to be a game.
She's working with Chris Wall. She's authorizing or authoring the legislation.
Yeah.
They'll take it to the, you know, State House and Senate as soon as it's ready to go.
I have a question since she's working with Speaker Chris Welch. Maybe since you're acting as her spokesman, detailing her plans, I'll ask you. What about a domestic incident where there was no arrest or charges? Would you want to include something like that? Like when, if a man took his girlfriend's head and slammed it on the counter, would you include something like that for state police to consider in making a determination on whether someone should be able to have a FOID card and thus own a gun in Illinois? What do you think?
That case sounds really familiar.
Yeah.
She's working with Chris Welch.
Right. Well, Chris Welch. Chris Welch is that guy. So that's why it's relevant. I wonder.
He does have a FOID card. I mean, I know that he's.
Should
it be taken away?
Should
now?
Speaker Welch's right to own a gun in Illinois be taken away under this new law? I guess you have an ex post facto problem, but let's just
because
use
she
him.
She never pressed charges.
Well, right. Now, right. No arrest, but there is a police report, Hillside. So there's a police report, so there's a document. So what about including that, something like that, as something for state police to consider? I know we can't probably disarm Chris Welch at this point, but for the other Chris Welches out there that beat up their girlfriends, like your Illinois House Speaker did, there's no charges pressed because maybe the woman is afraid or whatever the reason is. Should that be included?
Maybe she banged her own head against the counter, Dan. Consider that?
I don't think that was the
case.
Well,
when his FOID card's up for renewal, yeah, that this bill actually might affect state lawmakers I'm not being funny.
Every law should affect state lawmakers just like it affects us. I know that's a novel concept in this state as well, but. Yeah, it's interesting. So, again, 24 plus the inclusion of threats as part of your record. So now here you get into some of the weeds here and I guess the judgment calls. So how would that – like what sources would report to state police of said threats?
If somebody's calling – so if police – this is what I heard her explain.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry,
yeah.
Channel 5's website doesn't hear the audio. She explained it as, you know, there's a threat made to yourself. If the police have to come out to your house because you're threatening yourself or others, that information, regardless of charges or not, must be passed along to Illinois State Police. But then I thought, did pass that along.
So local police departments would have a reporting duty to state police.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Regardless of your age, but at the age of 24, that is when you can get a FOID card without parental co-sponsorship.
All right.
I don't know
why
she magically picked 24, because then somebody will, you know, with an assault rifle who's 25, like, we should have raised it to 25.
No, she's in the Tim Evans camp. A person doesn't have the chief judge in Cook County, Tim Evans, right?
Oh.
Who famously explained that a person doesn't have the mental capacity, the brain is not fully developed till age 25, so sort of indicating that... you're not responsible for what you do until you're 25.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Maybe she's an acolyte of that school of thought. Although the funny thing is sometimes your brain never develops at all and then you run for the Illinois General Assembly. There are those cases too. Hi-oh.
But Chris Walsh, he's going to be co-sponsoring this legislation with her, so he better
wonderful
think before he put something down on ink, if you know what I mean.
Well, wonderful. Well, then you can ask one of the co-sponsor of the legislation if he's signed on as a co-sponsor. In a case like his, should that police report, you know, of you banging your girlfriend's head against the counter, you battering a woman, should that be included? I know it doesn't matter for electoral politics in this state. I know it doesn't matter in Proviso Township. I got that. But I mean, in terms of your ability to own a gun, you see the question I'm asking? I get it. I get he's the House Speaker and all the Democrats who voted for him don't care about this. I That's completely clear
to
me.
I thought all they care about is women, rights, and our well-being.
I get that.
My body, my choice.
I get Proviso Township voters don't care about men beating women. And I get the Democrat, House Democrat caucus doesn't care about that. I understand completely. I get that Governor Pritzker does not care about men beating up women as it pertains to their right to own a gun or be House Speaker. I totally understand. I'm just saying that. Is this something they might consider prospectively as a police report? You know, police were called because a report was made. Would that be something to be included for consideration by state police prospectively? Right. I understand Chris Welch is exempted.
Right.
I get it. The House Speaker.
Now, I wonder if they'll put in a grandfather clause to protect him.
I get it. I get there's a sort of a whole different set of rules for Chris Welch. And thugs that are Democrat office holders. Totally understand. And I get that the Democrat House caucus has his back. And I get that the governor. I get it. All the feminists. Totally get it.
Where were they for that?
Totally understand. Ralph and Rantoul.
Hey, good morning. I've got kind of a novel approach. I think that before somebody murders another person, or you could extend it even, commits grave bodily harm. I think that that person should be required to file for and be approved for that murder. Like you could go for a murder permit. Mm-hmm. You could extend that to other crimes as well. And I don't want to hear any of that nonsense, Dan and Amy, about there are already laws on the books about this stuff.
All right, Ralph. Jim in Palatine.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Good.
So should we limit that dude's First Amendment right? Because what he just said offended me. At what point do we stop pecking away at our constitutional rights and God-given rights to satisfy people that aren't satisfied with what they're not getting? I can guarantee you that there's not a FOID card on the west side or the south side for the people committing all these crimes all over our city and all the cities across America.
Thanks for the call, Jim. Ziff in Hyde Park.
Ziff, I miss you. How are you?
This guy just said, I am doing great. I'm like they say, getting out of the way and staying out of the way. I want to have just 30 seconds of fun with you guys.
Okay.
First, I want to ask Dan. Dan, your friend, the owner of the White Sox. Dan, do you think Dick Allen was a Hall of Famer?
Yes, I do.
Thank you. God bless you, Dan. I love you.
Yes.
Amy, do you think Dick Allen was a Hall of Famer?
Yes.
No. She doesn't know who Dick Allen is, but she agrees.
Not a clue in the world.
She wants your love, too, Ziff.
It sounds good. If you guys are in, I'm in, too.
Yeah.
Dick would have wanted me to forgive Jerry in this moment and honor Minnie Minoso and Jim Cott and attend the Hall of Famer as I'm going to do and respect the event and both of them. But Jerry has his day in court. I'm going to take Dick Allen's court, by the way, to the World Court in New York. Dan, I want to be serious for just a second. You have an assignment this weekend on Friday to watch 12 Angry Men. I went to the library and picked up
mm-hmm.
Bad Seed, Henry Fonda's The Wrong
yeah.
Man.
I've seen it, yeah.
And Amy, you have mm-hmm. to get Gone with the Wind.
Oh, I've seen it. Okay.
Chant Lane, you have to watch that one.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to really watch, be serious when you watch Shirley Chisholm Unbald and Unboss. Now, this is how Dan Bailey has to win the race. He has to use the Kennedy plan. One vote in every neighborhood he needs. I told Stephanie that when I saw her.
Uh-huh.
But the gun issue about this lady passing something. The guys in the neighborhood, what? Did they even read the card that they had one? They ain't interested in no cart. Come on. But the flag thing, Dan and Amy, I love. So we're going to hang flags on every school. White flags, so that means don't come in shooters. This is one school you don't come in. Guys, I love you guys. Just that's a little report from the streets. That's all. It's still going on. It's Friday, baby. Come on, get on out here with us.
All right. Thanks for the call, Ziff.
Thanks, Ziff. I haven't seen Ziff in, or heard from Ziff in months. Glad he's okay.
He's, you know, keeping it real in Hyde Park. John on the South Side.
Hey, Amy, Dan, good morning. How are you guys?
Good.
So, interesting, three things. Number one, there's some legislation proposed that has nothing to do with what happened in Highland Park and how that person obtained a FOID card. Two, you know, we want young people, 16, 17-year-olds, who have suicide ideation, you know, we hope that they tell somebody so they can get some help. How long is this going to prevent them from being able to own a gun? Forever? That's interesting.
Well, yeah, that's, you know, because there's a lot of mental health issues right now because of, you know, what we did to our children for 2 years.
Yeah, you're right. But your point is, so if there's there was a suicide threat that, and you, so you're denied a FOID card, for how long are you?
Do you have to wait for it to be expunged from your record? Do you have to hire an attorney?
Or get cleared by a psychiatrist or something? It's a good question.
Correct. And the last thing I want to say is, you know, we're talking about 24, 25. Brain is not fully developed. Yet at half that age, your brain is developed enough that you can choose to change your gender.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can change it at 12.
Yeah, thanks for the call.
Or 10.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really good point. Points he made.
David in Lansing.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. I have three quick considerations that should be considered to be put in this legislation about red flag laws. What if somebody is caught on 10 different videos inappropriately touching children, like fake President Biden was? Should they be denied a FOID card? And how about if somebody is selling our enemy, or a military enemy, U.S. resources, like fake President Biden, like the oil, and his son doing business with China and, you know, possibly Russia, and the laptops that backed it. And one more consideration, what if you're part of Black Lives Matter and or Antifa, and you're caught on video burning down a police,
precinct,
Union Club. Should you be denied a FOID card in those three cases? Well, I mean, those are considerations that are kind of, you know, those are like dangerous things we should consider, you know?
Yeah.
Thanks, David.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper, hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Dan and Amy, this is one of the more provocative campaign ads you're likely to see this season, this campaign season. Jerome Davison is a Republican running for Congress in Arizona. He is also a black gentleman. His campaign commercial,
which district is he?
Is about the need for a sport rifle, why he needs an AR-15.
Okay.
And as you listen to it, you have to think about men in white hoods coming at him, because that's what's depicted.
Democrats like to say that no one needs an AR-15 for self-defense, that no one could possibly need all 30 rounds. But when this rifle is the only thing standing between your family and a dozen angry Democrats in Klan hoods, you just might need that semi-automatic and all 30 rounds.
And he's got himself with the AR-15 and then the Klansmen on the run.
What's his name again?
Jerome Davison. He's a football player. I think he played
at U of A, excuse me.
He went to Arizona State, and I think he played for the Raiders or something.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sun Devils.
Yeah. Republican candidate for Congress in Arizona in the Arizona 4th.
Ooh, I'm watching it now. Ooh.
Yeah.
Ow. Ooh.
Pretty provocative. That's Maricopa County he's running in. So you want to? I will post it because it's worth checking it out. I'm not sure that it's the approach that I would take on that issue, but
it's his reality. It's his truth.
Right. Yeah. And I mean,
it's why he wants to go. And also too
the sort of nice piece of jujitsu in the ad. Well, wait a second, leftists. You say the greatest threat facing America is white supremacy. And white supremacists. I'm a black man. So I'm just taking what you said is our greatest threat, and I'm saying I need to be able to defend myself from that threat that you've identified. Oh, that could be fun.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM 560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Why Boris Johnson, Bojo, got the heave-ho?
I like that.
He gone.
Bojo the heave-ho.
Sort of this populist, figure, mayor of London, and then as one of the cheerleaders for Brexit. But as the Wall Street Journal opined, maybe it's just as simple as this. He campaigned from the right, but governed from the center left. And I wouldn't say center. I'd say left. He was on board. He gave ridiculous speeches at these global climate conferences. He was all in on the ascientific, apocalyptic green energy a deal, new deal, as the case may be. He was a COVIDian. Yeah. He was a lockdowner.
Yeah, but then still had parties on the side.
Well, that was one of his quote-unquote scandals, but it's the hypocrisy.
Exactly. The rules for thee, but not for me. It's Kevin Newsom. It's Governor Newsom. It's Governor Pritzker. It's the same thing.
Yeah, but that's just on COVID. I'm saying it's his hypocrisy generally. It's the Jekyll and Hyde routine, the forked tongue, however you want to describe it. Rhetoric on the center right, govern with the cultural Marxists.
And even on his way out yesterday, he didn't apologize and he blamed his party.
The herd instinct is powerful. When the herd moves, it moves. So how sad I am to be giving up the best job in the world. But them's the break.
Them's the breaks. No, I don't know if he's... I mean, he's just describing reality. When the herd moves, it moves, and that will be his political epitaph. But, I mean, just to give you an example of what Boris Johnson became once he ascended to PM, the statement he made last week that we played, just a refresher, this is how ridiculous of a figure he became.
We need more women in positions of power. If Putin was a woman, he obviously isn't, but if he were... I really don't think he would have embarked on a crazy macho war of invasion and violence in the way that he has. If you want a perfect example of toxic masculinity, it's what he's doing in Ukraine.
And if Boris Johnson wasn't a pea hat, and obviously he is, but if he wasn't, maybe he'd still be prime minister. For more on this, pleased to be joined by Dominic Green. He's a columnist for The Washington Examiner, contributor to The Wall Street Journal and The Spectator as well. Dominic, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hello, Dan. Hello, Amy from London.
Do I have that sussed out about right in your estimation?
Yes, pretty much. I'm afraid you do that Johnson was elected for two reasons. One, he wasn't going to be a Trotskyite like Jeremy Corbyn, the leader of the Labour Party in the elections of 2019. And two, to get out of the Brexit jam and move things forward. He managed to do both of those things. But what he did not do, as you're saying, is follow through and deliver the kind of programs that he campaigned on in 2019. It's true. It was bizarre. He became a sort of big government environmental apocalyptic person, which he previously hadn't been. And that has nothing to do with the priorities, most of them to do with deep economic problems that large parts of British society are facing. So he lost large parts of the public He was right. The herd did move. But there are two herds, really, in the Conservative Party. One of them is the MPs in the Parliament. And he never really had all of them. A lot of them were always in favor of staying in Europe, and most of them never liked or trusted him. The other part of the herd are the members of the party, and it's actually them who chose him as the leader, and it's they who now have to find a new leader. So what happens next? The herd is going to be pulling in two very different directions, and it's going to be quite ugly.
Well, what names are on the table?
All of them, really. Anyone who hasn't been disgraced in the last weeks with the revelations of secret drinking parties in the Downing Street offices when everyone else is locked down, or indeed a senior member of the government who seemed to be a serial bottom fondler, which Johnson seemed to object to. And I know it's still early in the morning, Dan. I'm sorry to lower the
spirit
that quickly, but
yes.
This is British politics we're talking about. Every member of the cabinet who has not been caught with his or her pants down in recent weeks is effectively whispering that they would quite like to be prime minister.
Mm. And Ian Richardson is unavailable.
Otherwise.
No competent performers are left. Ian Richardson, of course, is among them. I would compare what's about to take place to a beauty contest, except all of them are hideous. The Conservative Party has been in power now for 12 years and is starting to stink from the head. What we are seeing, and it has happened before, it happened in the later part of the Thatcher years, it happened in the later part of the Tony Blair years. Given enough time at the trough, they will get their faces dirty. And the result is, I think, the general public suspects that they've simply gone corrupt. Therefore, the Labour Party now have an opening, which is unimaginable. Nobody has squandered such a massive, massive lead like the one Johnson had in that election in 2019. Less than 3 years later, to be bounced out and to be so far behind in the polls. It's the most tragic waste of an opportunity that I can think of in my lifetime, if not in modern British history.
Wow.
But what was the final nail in the coffin, though, that did it for him? What was, you know, because we've been hearing about these scandals, but what was it that was like, that's enough? And people in his own party were resigning.
Pincher, right? Whip?
Well, it sounds very petty. There's a member of parliament who goes by the impossible name, really, of Stephen Pincher, who seems to have been a heavy drinker and a bottom pincher, made unwanted advances towards several
positively Dickensian.
And also in the bars of the Houses of Parliament. And this was, the party managers in Parliament were aware of this, and they seem to have indulged it or covered it up. At some point, it was brought to Johnson's attention. But he didn't think it was a problem and appointed this man to the whip's office, who were responsible for getting the votes in, and then later denied that he had been made aware. I mean, it sounds very small. I mean, and it's true, we have no idea what went on in the West Wing while the US was going through COVID. But in Britain, we have found out what is going on. The media has very aggressively gone after Boris for various reasons. And the result is that this was the final straw. And as the clip you just played with Boris Johnson saying, you know, we have to beware of toxic masculinity. Well, I mean, Boris Johnson is a symbol of toxic masculinity himself. And the deaf ear that he showed in this situation, I think, reflects that. And it reflects the way that sleaze has overtaken the party and they've become accustomed to indulging the kind of behavior which, if anyone did it in their place of work, they would have, they'd be out if they behaved like that, or they'd be facing proceedings. So they lost touch, in a way, with public sentiment. And this is part of the great, the tragic failing, because Boris Johnson unusually had this popular touch, even if he was very posh. People genuinely liked him, and he had what they call the common touch, and he seems to have lost that. And it's an astonishing turn of events, because this is someone with real, as I said, a common touch and real potential, tremendous hinge moment in the development of his country, massive parliamentary majority, and he really has turned it into a complete clown show almost overnight.
And it's just it seems to me too a classic case, as you're sort of describing, of losing your audience. His audience were those people who felt put upon by the ruling class in London, and he appealed to them, and then he did things like propose to raise the corporate tax rate by more than a third. at a time when Britain's economy was languishing, to completely inconsistent with the idea of promoting entrepreneurial capitalism. It seems like he got in and then he wanted to be the in crowd. And so his audience was the in crowd. It wasn't the out crowd.
It's very true. There is a substantial faction of the donors to the Conservative Party are very much in favor of environmentalism and green regulation and so on. And that plays in the hands of big government and its corporate friends. It doesn't help people out in the sticks. There are two theories for why this has happened. One of them is that Boris, who is a man of many partners, has fallen under the influence of his latest wife, who is a keen environmentalist, Carrie Johnson, who's nicknamed Carrie Antoinette. The other, which is, I think there's quite a lot of truth possibly there, but also the other reason, and it plays to that, which is he is someone who, like all British politicians, fancies themselves in a Churchillian frame. But one of the odd things about Winston Churchill was no one ever really liked him, and he didn't have many natural friends in his own party. And it's one thing governing during an emergency like a war, but in peacetime, you actually need the support of your own MPs. The prime minister is much weaker than the American president. You know, when we vote in Britain, we vote for the party, and they choose the leader.
Right.
And if they don't like him, they'll just stab him in the back and put a new one up. So he didn't build the kind of alliances that he needed to build. He didn't set a course and lead. And the result is that the Conservative Party, which is when it's not being completely incompetent, is actually a ruthless political machine, the most successful party in the history of Western democracy. They will do anything to cling on to power. So they knifed him. But he did blow it. And this is a failure of character and a failure of strategy. He is a lazy man, and he pursued a lazy man's strategy. And the result is that, you know, they've kicked him to touch. But, you know, I have a sneaking feeling we haven't seen the last of him. This is somebody who has defied the rules and defied the odds all the way. I can quite imagine the successors, you know, this is a poison chalice, after all, that he is passing on. I can imagine him making another run at the top job sooner or later.
Well, I expect him to wind up as like the UN General Counsel or something like that with what he's offered. But so forgetting him for a second, where is the British population now? Do you still have the same instinct to revolt against the ruling class that brought about Brexit, and thus therein lies political opportunity for somebody? You know, to take advantage of
that moment of rebellion, that rebellious sentiment. I think you're right. I think it might have passed, and people might have now settled down again to just complaining about things rather than changing them, because they do like to complain, and they are, you know, a traditionally minded people of habits. I do feel that moment has passed, and what we're going to get now is what people want, rather, is a return to normality. But of course, we're in a completely abnormal world now,
right?
Post-COVID and so on. And of course, COVID derailed any chance of governing normally in the last couple of years. I don't believe any British government, Conservative or Labour, can quickly answer that desire and give people normal life and solid economic prospects. Because if you compare Britain to the European Union, you know, the pound is doing better than the euro. The British growth is higher than that of the eurozone. I mean, it could be worse, but we're in a period of stagnation turning into recession, you know, all the same problems that the US economy has writ small. And of course, with less room for maneuver because, you know, the pound is not as strong as the dollar. You can't print as many. So no politician now can offer a quick answer. And as I said, you know, Labour are not in a hurry to take it over. That's because they know that, you know, they haven't got an answer, and they would rather allow Johnson's Conservative successes to foul it up and wait a couple of years for an election. But who knows? We may yet see yet another election.
Dominic Green, columnist for The Washington Examiner, contributor to The Wall Street Journal and The Spectator. And, you know, you might want to remind them, and including the conservative institutionalists, the establishmentarians, that, you know, when you do that return to normalcy thing, you could wind up with a Joe Biden and very quickly have 90% of the
terrible warning.
Yeah, right. Have 90% of the public thinking your country's on the wrong track, which isn't a good place to
be. There's nothing normal about Britain.
That's right. Dominic Green, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Dan, Amy, thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM 560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560 The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So the U.S. added 372,000 jobs in June, according to the Labor Department, announced just a bit ago. So, wait, are we going to a recession or not?
What's happening?
Because that number that was just reported, combined with James Freeman's monthly distillation of what NFIB's chief economist William Dunkelberg has to say about the environment for small business. Owners of small U.S. firms went on a hiring binge last month and continue to raise compensation to attract and retain scarce workers. It's, as Freeman comments, it's especially odd considering that owners of small firms are more pessimistic about future business conditions than they've been in at least 48 years, according to the NFIB survey. So we anticipate things are going to slow down or worse, but yet we're hiring and increasing our labor costs. What's going on here? Well, let's ask somebody with more knowledge on these matters than me. That would be Jim Perry, Senior Vice President and Partner at Arbor Research. Jim, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Good morning, Dan. Thank you.
So we're all this talk of the R word, and yet we see the jobs number and we see what you just heard me describe from NFIB.
Right. I guess the biggest thing to talk about here is the sort of macro metrics behind these kind of short-term weekly and monthly numbers. You and I have talked about this several times. You know, this pandemic has really changed what we use in terms of tools to measure where the economy is going, right? We've never done this before, right? $10 trillion worth of stimulus in basically 2 years changed the whole economy. And not to mention all the social and psychological things that it's done to workers and commuting and children and schools and all that sort of stuff. But the bottom line is that, you know, the risk assets that we have as savers, right, have had a tremendous boost over the last few years, largely due to the printing of money. And what I think people need to sort of embrace as the sort of truism of all truisms is that the stimulus that the government has provided savers is over, right? And that became very, very clear on January 4th, first trading day of the year. And, you know, the stock market is down 20, the S&P is down 20% this year, right? And it's retraced almost 40% of the whole rally from the pandemic lows. So a lot of people are hoping and wishing that, you know, this bear market is over, but it's not.
Well, you had just to that point, and again, the R word, two eggheads from one from Johns Hopkins and both are from Johns Hopkins, actually, writing in the Wall Street Journal about Fed policy and Jerome Powell's misunderstanding of what he doesn't understand, or misexplanation of what he doesn't seem to understand or want to. They write that recession is coming and that elevated inflation will continue for some time, at least 12 to 24 months. So what does that portend for job creation in the near term?
Right. Well, two things there. First of all, you know, econometric academics might have an idea of where interest rates are going, but they have no idea how long it's going to take to get there. So the idea that they've got a target of 12 to 24 months is kind of silly, because 24 months ago, the whole world was completely different than it is now, and nobody got it right. So let's just put the time frame out there. Okay. The first thing is, you know, the Fed is going to raise interest rates on July 27th by 75 basis points. And
Jerome Powell has been very clear, and he's been given a directive from the administration that inflation is the priority of the administration and of the Fed. And interest rates remain historically way too low. And it's easy to say Powell missed it and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, a lot of people missed it. Hindsight is genius, right? But with the Fed funds rate at 175 basis points at the upper bound and two-year notes that are trading at, you know, 310 basis points, you've got 150 basis points of Fed tightening between now and the election just to get back to normal. So you got July 27th, September 21st, and then another Fed meeting right before the election on November 2nd. And I think the Fed's going to move three times.
Well, so then what are the prospects that we're in a stagflationary environment with negative growth, high interest rates, high inflation, job loss?
Correct. That's the story. It's a stagflationary environment, and it's a mess. Interest rates are going up, and growth is going down. I mean, Q1, the first quarter of this year, GDP came in at minus 1.6%. And if you look at the Atlanta Fed now forecast for GDP in Q2, which we'll get toward the end of July, it's minus 2%. So you've had 6 months of negative growth, right? It used to be that the definition of a recession was 3 months. Now they have to say two quarters. But, you know, we are in a recession now with rising wages and rising food and energy prices. And that's killing half the workforce, right? People that live paycheck to paycheck or very close to it. Mm-hmm. And the administration knows that, and they're going to be in trouble in November if they don't try to pretend at least that they're addressing it.
Well, how high do you think, like a 30-year fixed mortgage rate's going to go, and how long is it going to stay there?
That's a good question, Amy. I think I'll be able to answer that more clearly in about 2 months. Okay. Let's see what happens after this next Fed hike on September 21st, which is still, it's 10 weeks away. A lot can happen through July and August. I think at the margin, what's happening here is that Fed is going to raise interest rates and cool demand and bring inflation down, or try to. And the only way they can do that, the only tool they have, is basically to nuke your brokerage account, right? They have to destroy demand. And that's coming. And I think
I don't think they're going to sell it quite that way. We're going to nuke your brokerage account to reduce inflation. But yeah, I hear you.
But let's call it, if it quacks, let's call it a duck.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's what's happening. That's the only thing they can do.
Well, not the Fed, but the federal government. One other thing they could do, particularly with respect to energy prices, is increase supply and not export increasingly scarce fuel like the administration has been doing. I note a couple of things going on with these green energy ideologues. We see a farmers' strike in the Netherlands. We talked a little bit earlier in the show. That's getting really right. chippy with the government, because the government has essentially seized the land of farmers so they can comply with UN climate goals for emissions. That's happening. The other story out of Germany. So we got unrest over fuel and food prices in a lot of places around the world, but I'm focusing on Western European nations because, it can't happen here, for the "it can't happen here" crowd. In Germany, Germany's largest residential landlord, the owner of about 490,000 properties, is set to impose energy rationing that will cut heating to tenants at night in response to gas imports from Russia. Half a million properties, the tenants of half a million properties in Germany are going to have to call Mike Lindell and get a MyPillow blanket because they're not going to have gas at night to heat their joint.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, the whole, clean energy and ESG kind of initiatives coming out of Europe and here, of course, these are inflationary, right? I mean, all it does is increase prices. And when you've got, a Russian invasion of Ukraine on top of that, Europe's really in trouble. I don't know if you've seen the euro recently, but it's a parity against the Swiss franc and very close to it against the dollar. So the European economy is just collapsing. And when politicians use these gas tax gimmicks, and even Biden's doing it. You know, everybody that trades oil knows that the production of oil in this country is still down 8 to 10% from the day Biden took office, right? And that's not going to get rolled back after the election. So we used to be an independent energy producer, and now we're not. And then the gas, a barrel of oil was $30 a barrel the day Biden took office, and it was $90 the day Putin crossed the Ukraine border. So for Biden to sit here on national television and tell everybody that this is Putin's fault is absolutely ludicrous. Barrel of oil was at 300% before Putin did anything, and since then it's at less than 10. So everybody in the markets knows that these are gimmicks and clean energy ideas and deflecting the fact that we're in a stagflationary environment.
And before we let you go, I always want to get the crypto question, because I know you're watching cryptocurrencies, and you're trying to, you know, this, we're learning from you as you're learning from what's happening out there. And with you know, Bitcoin hovering around, what, 21 grand now. What you see happening in terms of you talked about what's happening in the markets and people's brokerage accounts getting nuked. What you see happening in the crypto markets and where that's likely to go?
Since the highs in the crypto market, and especially in the last sort of 3 to 6 months, what we have learned is that in an investment portfolio, that asset, the Bitcoin, just to keep it simple, is an asset that correlates very, very highly to the NASDAQ, which is the most volatile of the stock indices that we have, right? So instead of being a haven or a hedge to the capital markets, it's really become part of the risky asset component of anybody's portfolio, right? And Warren Buffett's right, there is no intrinsic value to a Bitcoin, but the fact is that it does have a return, right? So there is a value to it. And frankly, you know, we are going toward digital currencies as a country and as a global economy. That's happening. The reason Bitcoin is here is because of the inefficiencies in the central clearing system that exists around the world with central banks, Europe, Asia, and here. And it's too expensive. And the big banks in all of these regions make a fortune off of people's daily transactions. So the blockchain ledger, which is encrypted, is peer-to-peer and person-to-person transactions that gives you price discovery. Now, that is a very libertarian, exciting, growing sector of this world and of the global economy. It is going to exist and continue to push back against central clearing. So all the libertarians out there are thrilled about this. As an asset, for somebody that's got 10 grand in savings or 100 grand in savings, to put, you know, 50% of your money in something that is correlated to the NASDAQ, that's a really risky bet, right? Nobody really knows what it's worth. Nobody knows what Tesla's worth. Nobody knows what, you know, Amazon is really worth. So does Bitcoin have a risk to it? Sure it does. It's a really risky asset. Do I own some? I do, from a long time ago. And I never look at it because I don't know what the price is. But I think that what has happened over the last several months is that we've recognized that it's a risky asset. And a lot of people that bought things, just like in the dot-com boom, 9% of the money went into it after it's increased in price by 90%, and everybody lost their money. And that's kind of where we are here. So now it's back to the professionals who are going to say, okay, what's this thing worth? Well, we'll find out in the next 2 years or 5 years. That's probably lower than here, but the usage of the blockchain will continue to expand by hundreds of percentage points per year.
He is Jim Perry, Senior Vice President and Partner at Arbor Research. Jim, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
Dan, Amy, thank you. Bye-bye. Have a good week.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Here's a treat. One of the socialist Spice Girls, Cori Bush from St. Louis, one of the newly minted ones.
Yeah, she's a newbie.
Oh, yeah. She's a big BLM fan. And she is a purveyor of everything is racist, including not forcing people to pay for other people's abortions.
I'm also proud to say that the House is ready to advance legislation when we get back to D.C. next month to finally repeal the Hyde Amendment. The Senate needs to step up. The Senate must step up to get rid of this racist, draconian, discriminatory policy.
The Hyde Amendment is racist. Let me hazard an argument on her behalf, because black women on a per capita basis get more abortions than white women. Is that a category that you want to lead? That's why it's racist. And but black women, at least single black women, are, socioeconomically disadvantaged, I suppose, is the argument that you make. Thus, the need to force people to pay for abortions for women of color. Excuse me, birthing people of color.
Yeah, get it right, Dan.
Yeah.
What are your pronouns?
Unless so that they can get abortions, because that's a status thing. That's good news. That more black women on a per capita basis have abortions than white women. That's great news that Planned Parenthood targets black neighborhoods with their abortion mills. This is how sick they are. And by the way, this sickness that you're hearing from Cori Bush and these other pro-abort extremists, Elizabeth Warren and her, we need to get rid of crisis pregnancy centers because they outnumber abortion mills in Massachusetts. This sickness you're hearing from them, these arguments, quote unquote, they're making, if you think or they think that this is what's going to save Democrat socialists in November is their radical pro-abortion extremism, they're in for a bigger surprise than they can anticipate. I mean, this is how siloed they are. How thick is your bubble? Remember, that was the question.
Oh, yeah.
After Trump's election, how could you? Nobody saw it coming. Nobody important saw it coming. A lot of people saw it coming. Nobody important, though. How thick was your bubble? You know, reporters having to think about this. Well, guess what? If you think this is the play, the Cori Bushes and the Elizabeth Warrens, this is the play for you on the left, good luck. Get ready to be asking yourself again on November 9th, how thick is my bubble?
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Open mic! Open mic Friday! Call in now! Open mic Friday!
Yes, it's that time of the week. Open mic Friday. Taking your calls, 312-642-5600. Turnkey.pro answer line. Comments, compliments, criticisms. General crack pottery. We'll take it all, including shout-outs. Crack pottery. You have a shout out to a crackpot.
I just want to interrupt you. Oh. What are you talking? Oh. Blah, 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 blah. Yes, my sister, Chrissy, she did call in a few weeks ago. And Kathy, they're having their big Tri-Sig reunion. She went to Eastern Illinois and they're having a reunion.
Tri-Sig?
Yeah, Sigma. Or no, yeah, Sigma, Sigma, Sigma. Purple and white. Don't you know the colors? Aren't you down with the struggle?
No, I'm not familiar with Tri-Sig. I tried Delta, I'm familiar.
Yeah,
with.
Delta. Can I help you? Help. Tri-Sigs were at Eastern Illinois. They're at other smaller schools. Mm. So they're having their reunion. And the ladies are listening right now. So they want to know, too, if you want to go down to the pool party tomorrow.
Is Tony Romo going to be there?
No.
Is Sean Payton going to be there?
No. Nor.
So I would be I'd get top billing.
Jimmy G went there, too.
Oh, yeah, Jimmy Garoppolo. He's not there.
And who else? The creator? Oh, the founder of Jimmy John's. They know him.
Jimmy John Leotude.
He's their age. They know him. Don't really particularly.
None of them are going to be there?
No, they're not.
Hmm. So I could be.
But Dan Prof, you'll be the big dog.
I could be the big show.
Yeah, you can invite it to a lot of bachelorette parties and now sorority reunions.
Yeah.
Hmm. Oh, Dan, what do you need? Can I rub your back with sunscreen?
Sorority. Yeah, right. That's how it goes. Sorority reunion. Wait, how old are they?
They're young.
Yeah. Okay. I'll take that under advice.
50 now, too, young man. That's what I've heard. Watch it.
That's what I've heard.
And never ask a lady how old she is. Or if she's pregnant. I'm just trying to help you out.
Okay. Yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. What year do they graduate Eastern?
1990?
Oof. Hard pass. I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
And shout out to everybody who lives in El Paso, Illinois.
I kind of want to talk about this guy, David Mastio, who's on Tucker's show. It's pretty brief. Let's get this in, then we'll get to your calls. Just because I think it's interesting to always to hear from somebody who was on the inside, now on the outside, telling you what's happening on the inside, which we sort of know, but the confirmation is useful. Mastio was a former opinion editor at USA Today, but then he got demoted. And then he left. And why he got demoted? He tweeted out that people who get pregnant are women.
Oh, shh.
Yeah.
No more mom and dad. It's birthing people.
Take a listen.
The only thing I did to do to get demoted was to send this tweet in reaction to our newspaper starting to say that we don't say pregnant women anymore. We say pregnant people.
Mm-hmm. And Mastio was asked about with question we always ask in these cases as well. Tucker asked him, what kind of support did you have there in the newsroom from all your colleagues? You see a lot of people rallying to your defense there, did you, David?
Nobody in the newsroom came to my defense. One person in the opinion section who's more conservative than I and a fan of Trump liked my tweet, but that was the extent of the support from the newsroom, and she's left USA Today, too. A group of young, woke journalists who think that censorship and speech codes are normal are now in charge in our newsroom. They call themselves the Diversity Committee, and the executives run in fear from their tantrums.
And why did he send that tweet, and why is he speaking out now?
That with our new policy that we didn't say pregnant women, we only said pregnant people, that facts didn't matter anymore. And I thought it was a grave threat to our institution. We're 250 daily newspapers across the country, and we're starting to spin out of control. You know, first it was illegal immigrants or undocumented immigrants, and then it was pregnant people, not pregnant women. And where are we going to go next?
Where indeed. All right, we'll take comments on that as well. Let's get to our callers. Tom in Richmond.
Hi. Hey, Tom. On the subject of, can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
On the subject of the unemployment numbers going up in June, every spring, late spring and summer, every industrious college and high school kid gets a job. And if you notice, there's not that many help wanted signs on the highway anymore, except maybe manufacturing firms looking for machinists.
Yeah.
And I think high school and college kids took those jobs en masse, kicked up the numbers. And this will happen every year, but I think it's bigger this year because so many other people don't want to work. And come August, they're all going to go back to school, and the numbers are going to plummet, and the for sale signs will be back out on the street.
You mean the help wanted signs be back on the street? Or
Help wanted signs, yeah, sorry. Yeah, the help wanted signs will be back up in late August.
Thanks for the call, Tom. The other Tom in Blue Island.
Hey, good morning, Dan, Amy. Dan, I thought the interview you tried, or debate, quote-unquote debate, you tried to have with that smarmy travel reporter was a tutorial on why you can't deal with leftists. He couldn't answer a simple question that you asked in reference to how the city is doing. Instead, he had to change it to a discussion about where you spend half of your time. And it's a display on why it's a waste of time even trying to have a discussion with them people. They just have to be defeated, as Rush Limbaugh would say.
Thanks for the call, Tom.
Stretch with the fingers.
Rick, Downers Grove.
Hey, good morning. Another great show. Hey, I got a quick question, a quick comment, and a piece of advice.
Oh, boy.
My question is, my question is, you know, they got Biden in the 30s, and with his performance, how can that be? I would think he'd be in the 20s at best, unless these polls are just not accurate or the country's far more stupid than I thought. In my comment is on the Bitcoin, you had the guy talking about it. Every time I try to understand what's going on, I get a Beanie Baby feel from it. So I don't know. I don't know that much about it, but I just get that feel.
Yeah, okay. Ty Warner did pretty good with those Beanie Babies there. Rick, but anyway.
Well, he did, but everybody else got hammered.
Yeah, well.
But, and my advice is, with the Taste of Chicago starting, my advice to people, and it'll help your life, if it starts with Taste of or ends with Fest, you don't need to do it. You guys have a good weekend.
Thanks for the call, Rick. If it starts with Taste of or ends with Fest, you don't need to do it. I like that.
I love it.
I am not a
but you're right there,
big fan of festivals, street fairs, block parties, parades. I don't like any of it. So
who's going to go to the Taste of Chicago?
I'm surprised
that they're still having it. It started on Navy Pier and then was moved.
Yeah.
It used to be the thing to be at.
Yeah, not so much anymore.
Fireworks festivals and all that.
Yeah, I'd also discourage participating in sizable gatherings in Chicago in our current climate.
I know, Lollapalooza's coming up in 2 weeks.
Rich, Indian Head Park. Hey, Rich.
Hello?
Hey, Rich.
Yeah, good morning. Good morning, guys. Hey. Listen, I have a question for you. What do you think about this Rapinoe receiving the Presidential Medal of Freedom? She doesn't honor our flag. She talked her teammates into kneeling for the national anthem. Mm-hmm. And I saw a tweet that said giving her the Medal of Freedom for kneeling for our national anthem is like giving Obama the Nobel Prize for bombing innocent people. And I do have another question for Amy.
Yeah.
Okay. Now's the time to ask it.
Amy, there's been a lot of protests since Roe versus Wade has been overturned. They said it's an attack on women. It's a slap in the face. Why isn't it a slap in the face for women and an attack on their rights for all of these fraud men trying to get into women's sports? Why aren't they more vocal about that? Thank you and have
why.
A good weekend.
Thanks,
honestly, I don't know why they're not more vocal about it. Because every time a man plays a sport, he's taking a spot away from a woman in a woman's sport. So,
solidarity and marginality. That's
and there's a
the
pro-life
play.
Pro-life march at the Daily Plaza or Federal Plaza.
Federal Plaza tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Yeah. Solidarity and marginality, Rich. That's the game. It's all power politics. The NAACP is not representative of all black people in this country. It's just black people with a particular ideology. And so the same with your third wave feminists. Ryan in New Lenox. So this is a favorite story of mine this week.
Hey, Dan and Amy, thanks for taking my call. First of all, per your interview with John Greenfield, I'd like to thank you, Dan, for accepting my preconditions to this call, which is that I can finish my sentence.
Right.
But hey, excuse me, if I could finish, Dan, if I could finish. and just please tell me that you're going to do a live remote from Ben Bradley's house sometime next week, please. I mean, this is my, I laughed so hard when you went through this story. My property taxes at my house in New Lenox, which is a very normal house in New Lenox, are $10,000. And he's paying $5,000 for a mega mansion in Hinsdale.
Five and a half bathrooms.
I mean, can you bring a dozen donuts over to that house and do a live remote from the belly of the beast, please?
Well, the first
we're
is,
all asking for it.
The first thing I'm going to do is find the listing agent and schedule a walkthrough. Maybe they have an open house going on. I'd love to. I'd encourage people to join me at the open house. Let's see here. I can give you the address too if people want to look it up. I mean, it's public record. This was a story in the Patch. 1532. Let me see here. Hold on.
Isn't that on County Line?
I think so. Hold on. I don't have the address in this story. 800 square foot, 6-bedroom mansion, 66,000 square feet. We're listing for $1.9 million, pays 5,000.
How many square feet?
6,000.
6,000, and he pays five.
Pays $5,000 in Hinsdale. I'll find that, Ryan. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. I got to go back to this. Let's see. We never sought a lowering of our tax bill. We've repeatedly told it sometimes takes years for Cook County for the appraisals to catch up. That's what Ben Bradley said. Oh, you didn't seek to lower it? Right, because we don't want anybody to know we're only paying $5,000. Hey, what is this $5,000? You're killing me over here. We didn't seek to lower it. Oh, that's awesome. Oh, sure. Hey, we're just, you know, we're just taking it as it comes here. We play by the rules there in the Bradley household, sure.
If the house is on Butterfield Road. And yeah. If they kept the property taxes that low, I might be interested in robbing a bank and buying that property.
Oh, is it 1532 Butterfield Road? Is that what it is? Yeah. Comparable homes in nearby Hinsdale, like a 7-bedroom, 6-bath home at 123 East Maple, $30,000 in taxes.
Oh my God.
Rob Johnson. Circuit Media guys.
My God, what's his?
No. Rob Johnson listed his home in Hinsdale last year for just under two million.
How much?
In 2019, he paid
$24,000
in taxes.
That's about right.
Yeah.
Well, why didn't he get a break like Ben Bradley? So 1532.
They're partial to WGN over at the assessor's office or something. I don't know.
Maybe it has something to do with a family member.
I don't know. Oh, wait a second. You're suggesting a media, a newsman, a journalist like Ben Bradley would even think about using clout? This is a journalist, though. This isn't a politician. This is a journalist. This is a person of integrity. This is one of our community elders. This is somebody we rely on for the truth, to know what's going on. This is somebody who holds people in power to account. A journalist in Chicago, Amy. How dare you suggest anything untoward could be going on here? Yeah. Elliot Wilmette.
Good morning, Amy. Good morning, Dan. I was going to compliment you on your interview with the fellow with the detailed questions about your residence, et cetera. Radio is wonderful. I kept visualizing him as levitating over a minefield with his questions. It was nuts. Also, I've been waiting for them within the protests and celebrations of abortion to tell me that it builds character. That's all I'm waiting to hear. Thanks.
Thanks for the call, Elliot. Elliot. Frank in Arlington Heights.
Elliot. That's the way to do it.
Elliot. I'll be right here. Okay.
Be good.
He's on the Munchkin line, too. It's even better. Keep talking, Frank.
All right, Rick.
All right. Well, Amy, interesting.
He is on the Munchkin line. Dang it. All right.
That's why it was
so good. Yeah, you're on the Munchkin line.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
Just can you say I'm from the Lollipop Land real quick for me?
Am I on the Munchkin line? Now I got another ding there.
Yeah, you're still on the Munchkin line. Can you say what you got to say with the Munchkin voice?
Please say it. It's fun. Let's go.
Well, anyway, Ludwig Erhard. I was going to talk. Well, with Amy, I was talking about Sigma, Sigma, Sigma. Okay, mm-hmm. That's interesting. Heard that from you just a couple minutes ago. Personal story. My sister was in Sigma Kappa, and my brother would always make fun of her going to the things, and he'd go, "Oh, you're going to your Sigma, Sigma, Sigma event." He didn't know what the stuff was. So I'm going to have to tell him Sigma, Sigma, Sigma actually exists.
It does.
Funny thing I'm going to have to tell. Yeah, it does.
All right, now the German Chancellor. Go ahead.
Ludwig Erhard, yes. I mean, we have all these economic problems in our country, but you know what? The solutions are really simple in many respects. Just get rid of the damn quotas and price controls. That's what Ludwig Erhard did in 1948. He was the economic minister under Konrad Adenauer. And, you know, Hitler had set up price controls in, like, 1936, and they still had them after the war. And, you know, they had them there for a couple years. And he just said, we're getting rid of these price controls. And that led to the German economic miracle. That's what we have to do in our country. Biden has all these effectively quotas on oil with all of his restrictions. That basically puts a vertical line to the left of the supply-demand equilibrium. And that creates higher prices and less supply. You know, that's what we need to do in our country. And I don't think the Democrats are that stupid. I mean, they've done good things. I don't say good things before, but they've made adjustments before when they've needed to. Like in 1945, after the New Deal, they passed the Revenue Act of 1945, which lowered taxes, and that helped a little bit in terms of our economic boom after the war. They realized they had to get rid of some of the government restrictions and lower the taxes. So, you know, this isn't that hard. But Joe Biden does not seem to be interested at all in, you know, public opinion. He seems completely immune to it. I think it was Jeffrey Tucker who was talking about that in his article the other day, about how they're just, they don't care. It's almost deliberate.
Yeah.
And by the way, one more thing, too. I was looking it up. The instructions for the 1040, I had to look them up for the 2020 year, so I had to go to the IRS website. I needed those instructions or something. 115 pages. But when I looked it up on the IRS website, they had listed all of the other years, going back to like 1930. You could look them up. The 1945 IRS 1040 instructions, 4 pages. 115 today versus 4 pages to 1945. So
yeah.
Even though the tax rates were higher, I mean, the tax code is so much more complex. We could have an economic boom beyond what Reagan had if we just got rid of some of these damn government controls. We could.
Very good. Very good. Good comments, Frank. Thanks for the call, as always.
I'm looking at the house. Like,
$5,000.
40 pictures are online. This place is beautiful.
He never tried to lower those property taxes. So
I'm surprised they didn't try and fight it. You know?
$5,000. Joe in Fond du Lac.
Hey, good morning. Hey, so earlier this week, I texted in disputing some of Amy's reporting about the Highland Park shooting. And lo and behold, later on that day, guess who I got a call from?
The tall suite
about that about that text in disputing,
yeah.
Amy. And so Dan, so I continue to push back on her reporting.
Yes,
on the Highland Park, and you know what she did, Dan? I'm going to use a Danism here. She came over the top, and she said she had a super secret source that gave her that reporting.
So I said I have sources, and I told you to back off too, which was more of a Danism than
I think coming over the top is more of a Danism, but nonetheless, that's the way it went. So I thought I was talking to Dean Wormer for a minute there, but
Amy J's watchdog got it. Thanks for the call,
Thanks, Joe.
By the way, the address, the Butterfield address, is a home. That's a home in Flossmore.
Yeah, that's not.
This was.
We don't have to give out his home address.
It's a public record.
And I guess it is for sale too.
Yeah, it's for sale. So
I'm doing the virtual tour now. Can you leave?
I'm trying to get people to go to the open house. You know, put a bid in.
I'm sure it's already sold.
The reporting on this: the most expensive home in Flossmore, which is where Ben Bradley grew up, sold for $415,000.
Property taxes.
$29,000. 7.1% of home value, $29,000 on a $415,000 house in Flossmore. He's paying $5,000 on a house he's trying to sell for $1.9 million. No big deal about property taxes in Illinois.
Two fireplaces, five and a half baths.
No big deal. Wow. All right, Chuck and Delavan, close it out.
Hey, I was at Mars on Monday watching D.I. Duel, and I want the money that Tito's. I told you this before. What he spends on umbrellas. Now he's got the servers. He's got spandex pants that say Tito's on each hip, and it goes down each leg. I'm sending this out. If anybody can get me a pair of them for my girlfriend, so she can wear them when she's walking around the farmhouse. They're beautiful shorts.
As long as you're not going to be seen in spandex, Chuck.
Yeah, you know, my girlfriend threw my Daisy Dukes out now that I'm running for Congress.
Oh, that's right. Good luck.
Thank you, yeah. Chuck, and thank you to our callers, and thank you to all our listeners.
Yes.
Time to go.
Thanks.
We got to go over to Bradley's house. This is going to be a run on that place.
We're not storming the compound. Thanks to Justin Kosick and Quinn McCarthy. We're back here bright and early Monday morning, 5 a.m. Have a glorious weekend. Now here is Mike Scott.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.